Hey, everybody. This is Dan Gilbazan, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Spider-Friends, go for it!
Hey there, Spider-Friends. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. This week, I'm continuing my look back at Marvel Productions' first animated series way back in 1981, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Last week, I got things kick-started with the lovely and talented Kathy Garver. She was nice enough to stop by. Kathy voiced Angelica Jones, a.k.a. Firestar, on that series. This week, I've got the wall crawler himself, the leader of the Spider-Friends, the voice of the Amazing Spider-Man, Dan Gilbazan. He's going to be here in just a few minutes. And take note, Spider fans, August 22nd on Comic Book Central, a rare, and I do mean rare, interview with the original Spidey voice actor from the 1967 series. Paul Soles is going to be joining me here on the show. Back-to-back Spideys from two of the greatest Spider-Man shows of all, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, the original 60s animated Spider-Man. Dan Gilbazan in just a few minutes, Paul Soles on August 22nd. They're both right here on Comic Book Central. If you're a fan of comic books coming to life, if you're a fan of wonderful wall-crawling, web-spinning action, this is the place to be. If you haven't had a chance to listen to last week's episode with Kathy Garver, you're going to want to go back and do that. That's another great conversation. Not to worry, each and every episode of Comic Book Central can be found on the archive section of the website. It's comicbookcentral.net. There's a link there on the website to subscribe to the show on iTunes. That's the best way to get all the episodes suitable for your binge listening pleasure. You can download them all there. On the website, there's links to the Comic Book Central Facebook page. It's Comic Book Central Network directly. Twitter, there's a link there. Of course, again, those sites, you can get them directly. Facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. On Twitter, it's at Comic Book CTRL. You can show your support for Comic Book Central by getting the word out to others. Share it on Facebook, share it on Twitter, retweet it, hashtag share the lair. That's always appreciated. Not only does that show your support of Comic Book Central, but you're helping to get these conversations out to so many people, to a much wider audience. Over 100 countries already. I appreciate everybody helping to get the word out. If you're on iTunes, please leave a review when you're there. Tell me what you think of the show. Of course, you can always reach me at the website by clicking the Signal Me tab, or you can drop me a line at joe@comicbookcentral.net. Would love to hear from everybody. All right, as I mentioned, a spider-rific show on tap for today. Let's get a little bit of background on my special guest. Then you can join me right back here where I'm going to be talking to the tremendously talented Dan Gilbazan. As you learned right here on Comic Book Central last week, in the early 1980s, Marvel Productions was born out of Stan Lee's suggestion that Marvel start producing animated shows of their own without licensing the characters out to other production companies. With Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Marvel wanted to bring some other heroes into Spidey's web of adventure. Firestar, voiced by my guest in the lair last week, Kathy Garver, and you have Iceman, voiced by Frank Welker. But who would fill the red and blue tights of our favorite wall crawler? The Spider-Friends call went out, and producers went with a relative newcomer to the world of animation voiceovers, actor Dan Gilbazan. Born in the Gateway City of St. Louis, Missouri, Dan graduated with a BA in drama from Webster University. He hit the road and hit the stage, touring in various theater groups. Looking to make it in Hollywood, he then headed for the coast, where in true Peter Parker fashion, he found the road a little rocky, to say the least. But as we all know, that radioactive spider found Peter Parker, transformed him into the Amazing Spider-Man. In 1981, the Amazing Spider-Man found Dan Gilbazan and transformed him into one of the most prolific voiceover actors around. With Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Dan logged 3 seasons as Old Webhead, battling Marvel villains in some classic cartoon adventures.
So, they laughed at me for being a bookworm, huh? Well, now I'm ready to show them. All of them. Okay, world, better hang on to your hat, because here comes your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man!
Dan followed up his turn as Spidey by launching into one animated series after another. G.I. Joe, Spiral Zone, Pound Puppies, Dino Riders. And he teamed up with his spider friend Frank Welker once again in one of the biggest tunes of the 80s, Transformers. Not only could Dan be heard on TV screens around the country, he popped in for some live-action guest appearances on some of the biggest shows in television history. And how's this for a little spider history? 30 years after his first voiceover gig as the Amazing Spider-Man, Dan returned to the Spider-Verse to voice Miguel O'Hara, the futuristic Spidey of the year 2099 in the video game Shattered Dimensions.
But now, I must turn my consciousness to the future and to... Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man of the year 2099.
That's me, ready to save the universe and looking good while doing it.
Continuing our look back at one of the coolest cartoons of the 80s, Spider-Man and his amazing friends. Joining me today, we've got the leader of the Spider-Friends, the wonderful web spinner himself. In addition to Spider-Man, he's voiced numerous characters, including Bumblebee from Transformers. You've seen him on shows like Murphy Brown, Desperate Housewives, and Boston Legal. His latest book, Soul, a Novel, is now available. Star of screen, stage, and page. A big Spider-Friends welcome to Dan Gilvezan. Dan, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Wow, thank you. Joe, let's hold for the applause for just a second.
Hey, let's let that die down.
Okay.
They're still standing. They're still standing.
I'm terribly embarrassed by this entire show of affection.
Okay, Spider-Man power or ability you would like to have in real life?
I think certainly the web swinging. Doesn't that look like great fun?
I mean,
you're a modern day Tarzan.
In the urban jungle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's got to be it, you know?
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Plus, he thought that up himself. It was like, well, depending on if you watch which movies you're watching, but for the most part, it was like his scientific know-how that kind of figured that out. So that's kind of cool on that end. So
exactly, which Tobey Maguire apparently absorbed into his body.
Yes, I kind of like the web shooters that he developed, which we're kind of back to now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we've used in the reboot.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen in the reboot of the reboot.
in Captain America Civil
War?
Yeah,
I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
I hope they stick with the regular web shooters. Hey, Stan Lee created it. That's the way they should be. So.
Yeah, well, you know, he was a scientific nerd, so it makes sense that he would be able to put that together.
That's why I like it so much. Hey, let's talk about acting. What was your first thought about getting into acting? Had you started in theater, some stage plays? How did you get involved in this? Because voiceover came afterward, right?
Yeah, a lot afterward, years afterward. I started on the stage, as many actors do. I went to a fine arts college and studied acting there for 4 years. And then after that, I went on the road doing classics like Shakespeare and the Greek playwrights for about a year after that. And then I traveled all around the country to repertory theaters and performed on stage there. I did dinner theater. I did children's theater. You know, it's a great grounding for a performer, especially you play in a lot of different spaces. We played in everything from giant civic auditoriums to cafeteria floors when we did the children's theater. So it really teaches you a lot about adjusting your performance for the space. And it's invaluable training for an actor who goes on to anything else.
How young a person were you when you first got into acting?
Well, I mean, right out of college, so I was like 21.
Okay. What was it about that? I mean, had you seen a play? Had you seen something? You're like, oh, whoa, there I am.
I had been a ham from the get-go. I remember where I was told I was doing magic shows and carnivals and ventriloquism acts from, you know, the age of five on.
Okay, kind of like a Johnny Carson kind of thing then.
Yeah, you know, I was performing at a young age, and, you know, I've been really fortunate that I've been able to make a whole career out of that. But I guess the thing that really drew me into it was in high school I played Harold Hill in The Music Man, And that experience really sold me. I said, this is it. This is what I want to do.
Wow. Well, and there's a story that I heard you tell, and hopefully you can tell it here on the show today. But regarding your trip out to L.A., so you're getting into acting, and it was kind of a wake-up call for you, wasn't it, when you got out?
Yeah, when I came out, I couldn't get a job to save my life. I mean, I had come from being a successful stage actor, you know, practically all over the country, in the East in particular. You know, I did summer stock. I did all, as I said, dinner theater, children's theater, all this stuff. So I was always working. And I came out here with my then wife and completely fell off the edge of the world. Nobody, you know, I couldn't find an agent. Nobody was interested in me. And it took a good 5 years before things started to hit. So that's a real good lesson to anybody considering a career in show business. I've heard people go, well, you know, I think I'm going to go out and give it a year. And I'm like, you know what? Don't even think about it. Wow. You know, you've got to be so committed to this thing that you'll go through anything to get there.
What did you do during that time?
I drove a cab.
Okay. I mean, it's just like you're who's that, like Bobby on Taxi?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, actually, I saw the movie Taxi Driver, okay. And the next day I went down to City Hall and applied for my act license.
Wow.
And I drove from 3 in the afternoon to 3 in the morning, and my friend, you have not experienced life until you've driven up and down Hollywood Boulevard at about 3 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And so then you're just auditioning all day and then seeing,
no, I wasn't even
seeing the wildlife at night?
In order to get an audition, you have to have an agent in this town.
Mm.
And I couldn't get an agent interested for a good long time. So, no, I wasn't auditioning for anything. I was beating the sidewalks trying to find an agent. I did some workshops and I did some waiver theaters, which is, you know, small theaters here to try to get people out to come and see it. But people weren't that interested to come and see it. It was very, very difficult at the beginning.
What kept you going?
My desire to make it work. I mean, that's you know, as I mentioned before, if you don't have it in your gut, if you don't have it in your heart, I had a wonderful acting teacher who gave a great speech on that. I wish I had recorded it because it was all about, he said, you know, if you don't have to do this to the bottom of your feet, don't. Save yourself the grief. And those were great words. And I knew that this is what I wanted to do. So if I had to stay for 20 years before anything happened, I was willing to do that. Fortunately, I didn't have to.
Well, thank goodness you didn't have to. And thank goodness for us, because definitely an early gig, maybe your earliest gig. Are we talking Spider-Man for like right out of the gate here?
Well, it was certainly my first voiceover gig, yes.
Yeah, this is something. Okay. Tell us how you came into the world of Spider-Man and Marvel Productions, I think. We talked to Stan Lee on the premiere episode of this podcast, and he talked about moving. Hey, I'm going from the East Coast to the West Coast, and we're doing our own animation.
Yeah, this was – I should clarify. I had done radio voiceovers and some TV voiceovers back East. This was my first foray into animation.
What an intro.
Yeah, it was quite a splash. So what happened was, as Stan said, Marvel Productions up to that point had always licensed their characters out to other animation studios, and they never produced anything themselves. But then they decided that they would come out here, and they did. They brought a small staff with them. They hired people out here. Stan came out. They set up a small office out in Van Nuys, and their first production was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. So it was a big deal. I mean, everybody in town was up for these roles, and I had had no experience whatsoever in the voiceover field, and it's just before that time, I had managed to snare a voiceover agent who said, yeah, well, I'll send you out for a few things. We'll see how you do, and I was sent out for this because they were seeing everyone. I mean, literally everyone, from the top performers to nobodies like me. So I went to the audition, and I read for Spider-Man. And about a week later, my agent called me and said they want to see you again. And I said, oh, okay, good. They must be interested. So I went for the call back, and they said, okay, thank you very much. And about a week after that, He said, they want to see you again. I thought, wow, this is getting serious. So I went to the audition, and they started mixing and matching us with different actors. They always had me playing Spider-Man, but they had other, they would bring in, another Spider-Man and a Firestar and a different Iceman. And finally, at the end of that call, the three of us, Kathy and Frank and I, ended up in front of the microphones. And the producer came out, Dennis Marks, who was a real sweet, beautiful man. He's passed away since, but he was a great, great guy. I loved him very much. He came out and said, well, this is our team. Congratulations, everybody. We're going to start recording probably in another week or so. And, I was over the moon. I was like, what the hell is this? I've never done this before, and here I am the lead in this giant production that Marvel is doing.
Now,
I was Spider-Man. And, unlike a lot of actors who just, do a role, I was a big Spider-Man fan.
Yeah, you just made us all happy right there. That's what we wanted to hear.
Dude, I had a Spider-Man poster hanging in my bedroom for many years.
Yes.
I had two posters. One was Mr. Spock, and the other was Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, we're all
happy. I never got to play a Vulcan, but I got to be Spider-Man.
Wow. So you knew the character.
I did. And maybe that was part of the reason that I got the role, because
okay.
I knew that whole smart aleck attitude that he adopts when he's, when he's fighting the bad guys.
Right.
And that's a real key to the character.
Okay.
He goes from Peter Parker, the sort of bumbling, embarrassed, little schlemiel, to, this wisecracking superhero.
Yeah.
So I was familiar with that.
Sorry, didn't mean to jump in with a fanboy enthusiasm, but we talked to some actors and they're like, well, I had to go back and read some comic books. And it's like, no, you knew the character, but okay.
Oh, yeah.
So go ahead, finish the story because it gets even crazier.
Yeah, it sure does. and let me mention also, in my youth, my bicycle broke. And there was a Rexall drug about a mile away from my house that I would ride my bike to every month to pick up the latest Spider-Man. And I wish I'd saved those, because we're talking about the 60s here. I mean, these things are valuable now.
Yeah, first appearance.
My mother sold them when I moved out of the house, I left a box of them foolishly. My mother sold them for like a nickel a piece at a garage sale.
Oh, that hurts.
Anyway, that's a tangent, but I just wanted to mention. Oh, so my bike broke. And I was forced to ride my sister's bike, this girl's bike, to the Rexall. And I remember pumping that bike, going uphill to the Rexall, going, when I get my driver's license, I will never ride a bike again. And I've kept true to that. I've never gotten on a bike since I was 16.
Oh,
anyway,
okay.
That's a little side gag. But that shows you my devotion to this.
You're
character.
Passionate. And you wanted the comic books.
Yeah, exactly. I did whatever I had to do to get him. Anyway, so I get the role of Spider-Man, and I'm thrilled, and I'm delighted, and I'm like over the moon. And about a week later, I ran into a friend of mine, and she said, I'm sorry about Spider-Man. And I said, I'm sorry, what do you mean? And she said, well, we recorded the first episode last week. I was a guest on the show, and you weren't him. And I was like, what? I thought they told me it was like, I was who I'm supposed to be. They said I was.
You're Spider-Man, so of course.
I know, I was Spider-Man. So I called my agent. I said, well, what happened? He said, the network heard the first episode. Or the network heard your auditions, the final auditions, and they like this other guy better. And the network is paying the bills, so they have the final say.
Mm.
So I was naturally super disappointed. But I took it, I took it as a positive sign. I mean, I got so close. I thought, I'm in the running now. This is cool. This kind of put me on the map. So, it's okay. I mean, I had to lick my wounds. And that's so much a part of this business. You really have to develop a thick hide, because it's such an up-and-down process. I mean, it's really grueling, which is why the acting teacher I spoke of said, don't do this unless you really have to, because it's cruel and it can tear you apart. At any rate, another week goes by, and my agent calls and says, okay, you're doing Spider-Man next Wednesday, 10 o'clock, be at the studio. And I'm like, what? He said, yeah, they got the first, they got the tracks back from the first episode. They didn't like him after all. They're back to you. I was like, good Lord, this is insane. I'd been on roller coasters before. That was nothing like this. I mean, this was gut-wrenching.
Welcome to Hollywood. Yeah, welcome to Hollywood, now, kid. Yeah. You're going to be big in this business, see?
So now I'm thrilled again, but I'm scared. And the reason I'm scared is I'd never done animation before. But when I got the job, I figured I'm going to be next to Frank Welker, who was Frank was already well-established, you know, with Scooby-Doo and all the other stuff he did.
Yeah, he's done a
Plus,
ton.
Kathy knew what she was doing, and I thought, I'll just do what they do. I'll listen to their projection and how they handle the microphone and all of that stuff and the inflections and stuff like that, and I'll just copy them, and I'll be fine. Well, I found out that they were keeping all of those tracks, and I was going to be in there by myself. So now I'm petrified. Because I got to go in and stand in front of this microphone all by myself while the producer, the director, the engineer, and a bunch of people from the network are behind this glass looking at me. Somehow I got through it. It was partly Alan Dinehart, who was our director. He directed the first season. He talked me through it and, you know, said, I need more projection here. I need you to pull back here. He really got me through that first episode.
Yeah. Now, was this for a Triumph of the Green Goblin?
I'm sorry? Yeah. I'm sorry?
Was this for Triumph of the Green Goblin, the first episode?
Yeah, that was the first episode we recorded. Yeah.
Okay. So you're in there. But yeah, and Spider Friends go for it to nobody.
Exactly.
Like the janitor in the corner.
Yeah. I was completely by myself. And I finished the thing. I was drenched in sweat, and I thought, God, I only hope when the network hears this, they decide not to move on to a third person. Well, they didn't, and I was. And the producer Alan, or the director Alan Dinehart, and producer Dennis Marks would kid me every week. I'd go, so I'm it, right? And they were like, you know, they do the hand thing where it goes back and forth.
Uh-huh.
They go, yeah, maybe. Oh. We may move on. And they taunted me mercilessly until about the fifth episode when I felt like, okay, I'm finally here.
Yeah, don't buy that house just yet, kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hey, we're glad you got the part. You nailed it. I actually just watched that episode recently, and it's fantastic. I mean, you can't tell you're sweating in a room by yourself.
Yeah, listen to that first episode again and realize that I'm there all by myself.
I'm watching it with different eyes now because that's amazing. We talked about some of the cast. Oh, by the way, when I spoke to Kathy Garver, I did ask her the question, Peter Parker or Bobby Drake? Would you care to guess her answer?
I think she's got to go with Bobby, right?
Her words, she said, Angelica's heart belongs to Peter Parker. So there you go, my friend.
Because she said to me many times, fire and ice, Dan, fire and ice.
Well, all these years later, I got the answer. So now we know. So, you know, you are in her heart. So take that, Frank Welker. Let's talk about this cast. I mean, my goodness, we talked about Frank Welker, Kathy Garver, amazing on this. June Foray,
yeah,
as Aunt May. Did you get to work with her? Because she did Rocky the Flying Squirrel. She's been legendary voice actress.
Yeah, she did the witches in the Warner Brothers cartoons, and she did the grandma in the Sylvester and Tweety episodes. I mean, she was a legend already.
Did you get to work with her directly?
Yes, when we recorded the shows, it was all of us.
Okay, because Kathy mentioned it was like the radio play, so I didn't know how many how many of you were in the room at one time, or everybody was in the room at one time.
Yeah, we were all together, and it was just great. It was a big party, and you know, meeting June was a real thrill. I mean, June is still with us.
Yep.
I mean, she's still out there. But that was a real thrill. I met so many great actors who came in to guest on the show. You know, John Stevenson. We had Mike Glensara, who I remembered as a kid from Broken Arrow. He played the Indian in the TV series.
Yeah.
Hans Conried, who was the Disney Captain Hook. Alan Young, who was from Mr. Ed. I mean, on and on. All these people that I had watched as a kid.
Your buddy Michael Bell. You're the great Michael Bell, who's been on the show here.
Michael Bell, as Doc Ock. And John Stevenson, who just passed away not that long ago. John, I loved very much. He was the sweetest man ever. Very polite, very gentlemanly. He played Electro, I think, was his role. So I got to work with many, many people that I respected and knew from watching TV as a kid.
And of course, Stan Lee doing the narration. Did you get to discuss much of Spidey with Stan Lee?
Yeah, we had there was a cast party at the end of the first season after we recorded the 13th episode. And they had us out to the Marvel offices, and there was a kind of a courtyard in the middle. It was built like a big square, and in the middle was a lovely little courtyard, and we had a great little cast party, and Stan was there, and we talked a lot about it, and I have some pictures from it that I don't think anybody's ever seen. So you have to remember when Stan did the bumpers, I believe that was added later.
Yeah, he Stan came was, in, right.
Yeah, Stan was not with us in the studio. I think that started like in the second season, I think.
Yeah, I think then later on when the show was airing, then they went back in and redid his voice over the first episode, first season episodes. Yeah, I didn't know if he was like kind of popping into the studio and checking things out or seeing who the latest Spider-Man was.
No, we never saw him. I ran into him a few times just in and out because he would come in and do his stuff, and then, you know, the ensemble would come in and record their stuff. So I didn't see much of him. The most time I spent with him was at the cast party, and then we were together on a panel for Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions a few years ago down in San Diego, and he and I were on the same panel, and we got a chance to chat again.
Oh,
and,
very cool.
It's great to be with him. He's this man, he has more energy than any 20-year-old I know.
We talked about that when he was on the show. It's just like he just doesn't stop. And he said, if you just love what you're doing, it's not work.
Yeah.
It keeps you going. How did you approach the character? Because we talked with Kathy. She had no basis. I mean, this was an original character, Firestar. So she kind of had to make things up as she went. You've got a whole history of Spider-Man coming into this. Plus, you know the character. How did anything inform your approach to the character, the comics, maybe even the live-action show, Paul Soles, in the 60s, or did you have something that you brought to it different?
Well, before going into the studio, I used to sing, Spider-Man, Spider-Man does whatever. No, that's not the case.
In your head, you probably did. We all do that.
We all do that, yes. Because that was my first exposure to the animated version. I guess that was the first animated version, yes?
Yeah. Correct.
The Paul Soles version. Yeah.
Correct.
Anyway, as I said, from being a fan early on and from reading the comics, I knew the character very well. And I just knew that as Peter Parker, he was withdrawn. He was unsure of himself. He especially around girls, he was hesitant. And then when he became Spider-Man, that went away. It was almost as if the mask freed him, and he became that wisecracking sort of, you know, all the stuff you probably wanted to say as Peter Parker, he was able to say as Spider-Man, and that was a real key to the character. If you listen to the shows, my vocal approach between the two is very different, and as a matter of fact, even the voice is pitched a little higher when he's Peter Parker. When he becomes Spider-Man, it's a little more take charge, a little more in control. So that was a real key, and that helped me understand exactly what that character was about.
Okay, so when you got, now, did anything like Bud Collier come into mind when he was doing Clark Kent Superman, or anything like that?
It was kind of the same thing. I mean, if you listen to those early radio early the Fleischer cartoons, you can hear that also.
Okay. Now, in season two, you actually got to they did the origin stories in season two.
Yeah.
Had they talked? Yeah. I mean, any idea why they chose to do? They did like three origin stories as season two. Had they talked about that, or was like, oh, boy, we should probably go back and do these, or was that all planned out all along?
Actually, I don't think it was planned all along. In fact, I was a little taken aback because the first episode was the first season was 13 episodes, and I thought, well, we'll do another 13 because this show was renewed by NBC. And we did three, and I was like, I don't understand. What does this mean? But I was really fortunate to be able to do the origin story because that's the key to the character, you know, the Uncle Ben's death and all of that. I mean, I was just chomping at the bit to do that. And I think I did a pretty decent job of it.
Yeah, you get the classic line, with great power
comes great responsibility.
You got that line. Now, you talked to Stan after season one. Had you talked anything about the origin or like, oh, I'd really love to tear into this, the origin story or anything like that with him?
No, that was totally the I guess between the producers and the network when they did the three origin stories, because we didn't know what the script was going to be until we walked into the studio.
Okay.
The way it usually worked was we'd do a read through of the script around the table. Alan Dinehart would give us some clues about it, and I don't think Dinehart even directed the second episode, the second season. I'm trying to remember. John Jurwitz directed the third. I know that. But we would do the table read, and then we'd get in front of the mic and do the thing. So we never really knew until we went in there what the script was going to be. I had to really sort of, you know, pull that together, because it's like that's an important part of the mythos.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask. Did you approach that episode a little differently than some of the other ones, realizing the weight of that?
Yes, absolutely. If you watch it, there's much more emotion in that episode than there probably ever was in the first 13. I mean, the death of Uncle Ben. And even the wraparound where he says, "I don't want to be Spider-Man anymore. I don't want to do this." And it was a very different sort of feel on that episode.
Yeah,
and that's where I had to really reach down with my acting training and pull that up. And that's where, you know, that kind of stuff comes in handy.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, there is a definite difference in there when you watch it. There's a little more weight to that. Favorite episodes you go through? I mean, one of mine is the origin of the Spider-Friends. I thought that was cool that Stark financed.
that was fun. Well, the origin show is my absolute favorite. And I think my second one has to be, even though I was all by myself, the very first one, the Green Goblin episode.
Okay, well, probably the most memorable, because you're just all the adrenaline, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably it, too. And plus, I think it came out really great. And as a side note, the producer, Dennis Marks, did the voice of the Green Goblin.
Oh, wow. Okay. Favorite moments with the cast? Because you've got Welker there, who has to be just nuts when you guys are recording. Kathy Garver. Any favorite moments? Not necessarily even just line readings or anything, but just hanging out with these guys. What do you guys like when you get together?
Oh, it was like a big party. I mean, because we're performers, so we're on from the moment we walk in the door of the studio to the moment we walk out, and probably several hours after that in the car on the way home. There was a lot of energy in the room. Frank is as you know, he's an incredible talent. I mean, he can do everything from dragons to monsters to dogs to cats. He does a cricket that will have you looking in the corner for it. I mean, he is the Mel Blanc of today. So I learned a lot just standing next to Frank, you know, and watching him work, how he worked the mic and his different techniques, vocal techniques. Kathy was just, I knew her from Family Affair, of course, and fell in love with her immediately. She was great. I remember this is not a real kind of happy thing, but I remember very specifically Hans Conried. We had taken a break between recording the first act and the second act, and he was sitting in a chair off to the side. And, you know, I knew him as Uncle Tanous from the Danny Thomas show, which shows how old I am. He played Danny Thomas's uncle, and he was absolutely hilarious. If you do a search on YouTube for some Danny Thomas episodes, you might find one, and he was hilarious. And he did Captain Hook, of course, in the Disney Peter Pan. So I was a big fan of his. So I sat down next to him and started talking to him. And I noticed he just looked really tired and really worn out and just kind of down. And he passed away about a month or so later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And he played the chameleon, correct?
Okay, yeah, exactly. And so that was probably one of his last performances, but I remember that very vividly, sitting next to him and thinking, wow, he looks so tired. He looks so worn out. And yet when he got in front of the microphone, bang, you know, here comes the performance.
Oh, so he was right there.
You know, a true actor. You know,
well, and you get to meet these other actors. You get to work with them. Some of these legends, well, like we said, even June Foray, just these legends of the business. And you got to work with. I know we're a little tight on time here, but you got to work with Frank Welker again on Transformers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we don't have time. We'll have to have you back on another episode to talk Transformers. But I know you've written a book. You voiced the character Bumblebee, where we can find out all about Bumblebee in that. Go ahead and give us the title of that book.
It's called Bumblebee and Me, Life as a G1 Transformer. And the reason I wrote it very quickly is I've done conventions in the last couple of years, and it's been great to meet the fans. And a lot of the questions tend to be the same, so I thought, you know, I'm going to sit down and just put this in a book so people who can't come to the conventions can get some idea of what the show was. I talk about, you know, recording sessions. I talk about the different performers that I got to know. The whole process, really, from my audition to the very end of the show, which ended kind of with a thud, believe it or not. It just sort of ended. Nope, none of us were aware that it was going to. At any rate, it's available on Amazon. It's called Bumblebee and Me. And if you do a search on that or my name, it'll come up. And buy a copy. It's a great read. There's a complete episode guide at the end. There's a bunch of pictures that have never before been published. It's available as a paperback, as an e-book, or as an audiobook. And I hired one of the finest voiceover performers I could think of, and that was myself.
Did you give yourself a discount?
I did, indeed.
Oh, very good. You're easy to work with, right? You take direction from yourself, Paul?
Pretty well, yeah. And I didn't pay myself union wages.
Okay.
So I saved a lot of money on that.
Amazing. Well, we'll check that out, too. And I have to ask, you came back to the character of the Spider-Man universe almost 30 years later for the video game, Spider-Man Shattered Dimensions. I thought this was an incredible concept. Four different Spider-Man actors. We have yourself, Christopher Daniel Barnes from the 90s Spider-Man, Neil Patrick Harris from the MTV Spider-Man, and Josh Keaton.
Yep.
Ultimate Spider-Man.
All of them. Yeah. Unfortunately, we all recorded separately because that's the way video games are done. Everyone is done separately. But that was a real kick.
What was it like coming back to the character after all those years and a different take on
it? Well, it was a little different. When my agent called me and said, you know, told me the concept, I thought, wow, that's cool. But I ended up playing Spider-Man 2099, which is a very different character from the one that I had played in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. He's much darker. It's much grittier. It's a harder edged character. So I had to lower my pitch and really kind of get in there and get gritty with it. In fact, the director kept bringing me in that direction, you know, because I have a higher pitched voice, and he wanted, like, all right, come on, let's go. So I had to really get down there. It was a very different approach.
Okay. Did you come into it thinking, oh, yeah, Spider-Man is Amazing Friends, I've done this before, and then it's like, oh,
yeah,
at first I did.
Yeah, at first I did, and then they said, no, it's $20.99, so I had to do some research on that because I hadn't read, you know, the later comic books where he comes into play. Right. So I had to kind of do some research on him, and I thought, wow, this is really different. So I had to prepare myself that way. Now, speaking of returning to the character, I can talk about this now because the word is out. There's a Transformers video game coming up based on the G1 characters. I think it's coming out in October.
Okay, is this Transformers Devastation?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
They got a handful of the original voices, Michael Bell, Greg Berger, Frank Welker, and, of course, Peter, and myself reprising our roles. And this is the real Bumblebee. I don't care what you saw in the 80s. I don't care who played it after the 80s. That's my character.
This is the Bumblebee that we grew up on.
I was just thrilled to be able to do that again, and I hope I was able to do it justice.
Did you think you'd get another crack at it?
You know, you never know in this business what's around the corner. That's the wonderful and horrific thing about this business. You never know whether it's going to be a pile of gold or an anvil dropping on your head.
Oh, my. Well, you talked about that persistence early on. It's what kept you driving a cab. It's what kept you going. I thought that was a great lesson for anybody in any undertaking, whether you're doing a podcast, whether you're, you know, an office worker, whatever. I just think that's something, like you said, if you just are passionate about something, you just commit and you stuck to it. Man, you got Spider-Man and Bumblebee and all these. It's amazing. All these years later, we're still talking about all these characters.
Yeah, it's really quite amazing. I mean, we did a lot of animation in the 80s because all these toy companies said, wow, I need a 65-episode animated series based on my toy line. So we did tons of stuff. I mean, I did a show called Dino Riders. I did Sectars, which was a very short live show, but that was like insect characters. I did, you know, for Hanna-Barbera, I did Pound Puppies. That was cooler on Pound Puppy, very different from all the action-adventure shows. But a few of them have incredible legs. And, of course, Spider-Man was going to. We knew that. But nobody knew the Transformers was going to be so huge so many years later.
Is your house just full of toys? Do they just send you one of everything?
I'm staring right now at a shelf of wonderful toys that are given that were given to me at conventions by fans. There are tiny little clay models that people have made. There are cloth. I'm looking at cloth bumblebees. I'm looking at a bumblebee car that was made. I'm looking at a pink Transformer bumblebee. I'm looking at a Spider-Man ball that somebody gave me. So yeah, there are a few toys around the house.
Good to know you keep those. You're beloved. You're beloved. What can we say? You and your fellow actors are very beloved. We've got Soul, a novel. We can find that on your website as well. That's your latest novel.
Yeah, there are actually three books. There's Bumblebee and Me, which is about the show, obviously. The first book I wrote is called Drowned in the Grenadine, and that is a novelization of a lot of my experiences, and it shows what this business is like, the ups and downs of this business. I've had my actor friends who've read it have said, this is the most accurate portrayal of what we go through on a day-to-day basis. So if anybody's thinking about going into this, get that book and read it, and it may change your mind. There's Bumblebee and Me, and then the latest one is Soul, which is completely different. It's a fantasy that starts in heaven and ends up on Earth and in China and back on Earth and back in heaven. So that's something I had a lot of fun with, too, and I think it came out really well. Yeah, they're all available on Amazon. Just do a search on my name. They'll all come up. Okay. Or on any one of the books, and the rest of the books will come up, too.
And your website, if we want to find out more about you, it's dangelvazan.com.
Yeah.
Facebook and Twitter, are you out there?
I am on Facebook. Twitter I had to close down because my account got hacked. And I just said, I don't want to deal with this. So I shut that down.
Don't blame you.
Yeah,
don't blame
active.
You at all.
I have a lot of... I'm sorry?
Don't blame you at all. Somebody wants to go out there and pretend they're Spider-Man, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but anyway, somebody said, "Hey, you're trying to sell us aluminum siding," and I was like, "Oh no, please!" So
it's a new
I'm very active on Facebook, and a lot of fans, tuned in there. So you can look me up on Facebook.
You're definitely out there. We've got the website, we've got the books, we've got Dan Gilvezan. Dan, you're amazing. Speaking for myself and the listeners, we've been having an amazing time going back and revisiting Spider-Man is Amazing Friends, one of the coolest entries in the history of this character. Your performance, fantastic as the Webhead. Thank you so much for joining me on Comic Book Central today.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
Website again is dangilvezan.com. That has links to Dan's books on Amazon. On Facebook, it's Dan Gilvezan fan page. I'm going to put those links in the show notes on my website at comicbookcentral.net. My thanks to Dan for joining me today, and also to Kathy Garver for stopping by last week. Really enjoyed taking a look back at Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, one of my favorite cartoons of all time. More wall-crawling goodness in the weeks to come with Paul Soule's 60s Spider-Man. That is just around the corner. Folks, if you are in the Uncasville, Connecticut area, August 14th through the 16th, the place to be is the Mohegan Sun. That is where you can be a part of Connecticut Comic-Con. So many guests from the world of comic books and comic books coming to life. Here is just a brief preview of this crazy cool event.
Make it a super weekend when Connecticut Comic-Con hits the luxurious Mohegan Sun Casino Hotel in Uncasville, Connecticut, this August 14 to 16. Meet the Temple of Doom and Goonies star Ki-Hai Kwan in an ultra-rare con appearance. Catch up with The Flash's John Wesley Shipp, Heroes and the Force Awakens star Greg Grunberg, and the voice of Batman himself, Kevin Conroy. Talk with comic book legends including Roy Thomas, Neil Adams, Mike Zeck, and Walt Simmons. Plus, comic book dealers, toys, arts, pop culture, and lots more. Enter the cosplay contest or listen to live music from fan favorites High Adventure and Kiss Forever. Tickets on sale now for only $25, with kids 8 and under free, and so is the parking. Learn more at ctcomiccon.com.
Connecticut Comic Con,
this August 14 to 16.
Be there!
I'm going to be moderating some Q&As that weekend. The first one is going to be Saturday. That's going to be with Kevin Conroy, the voice of the Dark Knight on Batman the Animated Series. Longtime listeners of this show know that Kevin joined me back on episode 21 of Comic Book Central. We're going to be meeting up again at the convention. We're going to be joined by the head of DC Animation, Mike Carlin, where we're going to be talking about DC Animation past, present, and future. You don't want to miss that. Sunday, my Q&A with the Scarlet Speedster, the original Flash, John Wesley Shipp, who can also be seen on the current Flash TV series. If you're at the convention, stop by, say hi. Hey, also, Adrian Pasdar is going to be there. He's from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He joined me back on episode 86. He's going to be at Connecticut Comic Con. Oh, everyone's going to be at Connecticut Comic Con. Get your tickets at ConnecticutComicCon.com. It's CTComicon.com. If you heard episodes 40 and 41 of Comic Book Central, you know how much fun can be had at that show. I'm also looking forward to catching up with my buddies from the IndieCast while I'm at the convention. The IndieCast is the world's number one Indiana Jones podcast. I'm going to be recording some content with Mitch Halleck, Laird Malamed, Ron Longo, hopefully talking to Ke-Huy Quan, the actor who is so memorable as Short Round in Temple of Doom. That's going to be a blast. I think we're going to be hanging out in an exact replica of the Tanis Map Room from Raiders of the Lost Ark, so that's going to be cool. You're going to want to stay tuned to the IndieCast in the weeks to come.
Tune in each fortnight to the IndieCast, the world's number one Indiana Jones fan podcast.
Trust me.
Featuring the latest news, reviews, and interviews with on-screen and behind-the-scenes talent who help bring to life the greatest adventure movie series ever made. Each episode has the latest from the world of Indiana Jones, as well as interactive segments, trivia, contests, and specials, including radio dramas and music retrospectives. The IndieCast.
It's a transmitter. It's a radio for speaking to God.
Available in iTunes or listen directly at theindiecast.com.
If adventure has a name, it must be the IndieCast.
My Indiana Jones adventures at Connecticut Comic Con are going to be on an upcoming episode of the IndieCast. And note, on the very next episode of the IndieCast, my podcasting partner on the Further Adventures segment, Keith Voss, and I, we interviewed comic book writer Bill Messner-Loebs. It's a fun conversation. You're going to want to check that out. Bill had major runs on The Flash and Wonder Woman, where he created the character of Artemis while he was on that book. So he also wrote the adaptation of Dark Horse Comics' Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis. We've been talking a lot about Fate of Atlantis over on the IndieCast. So the next episode of the IndieCast is going to have our interview with Bill Messner-Loebs. No new episode of Comic Book Central this coming week, but you do get a comic book interview on the IndieCast, so you're going to want to check that out. Checking out the mailbag this week, Virtual Willie Lumpkin dropped off a letter from Ben Perez and Matt Rothblatt, co-creators of 5-3 Comics at 5-3comics.com. They write, "We are big fans of your podcast and really love the insight that we garner with respect to the comic book, film, and television industry. As publishers of independent comics, wanting to break our characters into film and TV, we can appreciate the hard work and determination in the guests that you have on your show. We're a couple of 40-something engineers who decided to create comic books, and we, along with one of our characters, Spiral Mind, landed a cameo on Sci-Fi's Lavalantula." Hey, very cool, guys. Thanks for writing in. I appreciate that. And congratulations on the cameo. That's very cool. I haven't seen it yet. I still haven't caught up with the Sharknado phenomenon yet. I know there are a couple movies in there, so I'll have to check those out. I'll have to check out Lavalantula. See if I can see you, and looking forward to seeing your character Spiral Mind on there. So congrats on that. Continued success. Hey, if you want to write into the show, you can click that Signal Me tab on the website at comicbookcentral.net. You can drop me a line, joe@comicbookcentral.net. All of the episodes are archived on the website. You can go back and check them out if you missed any. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's the best way to get them all. Like it on Facebook, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. Twitter is comicbookctrl, @comicbookctrl, #ShareTheLair. Thanks so much for getting the word out. Leave that review in iTunes. Hey, let's get that word out on Facebook and Twitter. All right, folks, my Stuber Sense is tingling, and that is telling me that I am out of time for the day. So I'm going to wrap things up here and get ready for Connecticut Comic Con. Again, next week, no new episode of Comic Book Central. I'm going to take a week off, go record some incredible content in the Nutmeg State at the convention. When I get back on this very show, you are going to hear that rare interview with the man who brought the Amazing Spider-Man to life on the 1967 animated series. That's right, Wallop and Web Snappers, actor Paul Soles is going to be here. Don't you dare miss it, Spider-Friends. Until then, keep your web shooters full, keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the Lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 Imported License. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
There's no place on Earth where you can hide from me. That face, it's... No, it can't be! But it was. The very man who'd run past me at the TV studio. The thief I didn't stop when I had the chance. My fault. All my fault. If only I'd stopped him when I could have, Uncle Ben would still be alive. I learned something important that night. I learned that with great power, there must also come great responsibility.
Oh, Peter.
Once, by not using my spider powers, I lost Uncle Ben. Now today, by using them, I might lose Aunt May. I'm ready to chuck it all and give up being Spider-Man.
Peter?
No way, buddy boy.
Yes.
No. What happened to that great lesson you learned?
Yes. With great power...
comes great responsibility?
You mean I'm being tested all over again?
Any way you want to put it.
Spidey, you already know what the answer has to be.
Go for it.